Club. Driving. No purchase necessary.
You're listening to Radio Free Urbanism.
Hello and welcome back to Radio Free Urbanism. I am one of your hosts, Alex Williams, and today I'm joined by three co-hosts. We'll start with our very special guest. We've got Alexandra here with us today.
Hi. Hello, everyone. Thank you again for having me. I'm Alexandra. I'm an urban planner. I'm one of the founders of Untitled Planning. So we're grateful for you for having Sammy on a few weeks ago. So I'm here to give another perspective, I suppose, on our work. I'm also the founder of Urban Limitroph, which is a podcast focusing on African urbanism and celebrating different initiatives happening across Africa and the diaspora. And what else do I do? I also work at the Infrastructure Institute at the School of Cities at the University of Toronto. And that's a research hub where we focus on like training, advisory, and a number of different things, and research, of course, related to creative mixed use development, social purpose real estate, and a number of different things. So busy bee, but I'm happy to be here. So thanks, everyone.
Awesome. Yeah, we're stoked to have you. We're glad to have the other half of Untitled Planning on our show today. And of course, my two friends who need no introduction, that's Nick Laporte and Ethan Myers. You guys can
welcome back. Okay. Viewers.
I was like, are they going to say hi? Are they going to say welcome back?
We're just going to be silent here, you know.
Yeah, you go with one of us and then the other.
Alex and I, at the same time.
Yeah.
We'll do our own show. We'll do like the basically Alex Urbanism podcast, and you guys can be silent parties. We'll just have you in the corner on the video, just sitting there listening intently to our beautiful insights into urbanism. We've got a few interesting stories today, a few fun ones and a few depressing ones. So today's going to be like kind of a mix of emotions, I expect. But hopefully we learn something and hopefully we can find ways to improve our cities through what we're talking about here today. We're going to start off with Nick. He's got a little something he wants to update us on.
This is coming from Vancouver, the city in which I reside. And this is happening right now at City Council. A councillor is proposing measures to revisit and enhance 30 kilometer per hour speed limits on local streets in Vancouver, along with some traffic calming solutions, stuff that I've talked about on my YouTube channel on multiple occasions, which is fantastic. Is going to amount to anything? I think probably not. It's a pretty majority conservative council right now that whose prerogative seems to be just more studies. Oh, we have to do a feasibility study over and over and over. It's like a 30 kilometer per hour speed limit on local streets is a no-brainer. Like, nobody needs to be going 50 kilometers an hour on somebody's street where people live, people are biking, people are playing. It's crazy. But we're going to talk more about that next week because we're going to find out the results of that. And it also is going to relate to a story that I'm talking about later in the episode.
Okay. I'm excited. I'm excited to get into that story again next week. In the meantime, Ethan, what's up?
Ladies and gentlemen, I actually did a collaboration video pretty recently. If you folks have ever heard of More Than Transit, he is a good friend of the podcast here. And he just made a video titled, How to Add Transit Services to New Neighborhoods. And I did a little section on there. So if you want to go check that out, go support More Than Transit. They're still a pretty small creator. They make great content. I highly recommend you go check them out. Great videos. But yeah, that's what's it from me.
Yeah. And I've got a little update, of course, with RCG upzoning hopefully coming to Calgary. I have been out preaching the good word. I even bothered some people on the bus to university the other day. I got off the bus, started up a conversation with a couple people into whom's conversation I was eavesdropping. And they invited me to join the conversation. At which point I said, hey, come speak at City Council on April 22nd, 2024 to get this upzoning to happen, to provide more property rights for homeowners and more housing for Calgarians, among a bunch of other great benefits. So I'm excited about that project. I also launched the YouTube channel Unsprawling this week, which is going to be a entirely Calgary-focused urbanism channel where I'm working with other Calgary urbanists on making our city a great place to be. So stay tuned over there on Unsprawling to hear some interesting conversations about our city. And yeah, we're excited to have Alexandra on the show. I want to hear, before we get into our news stories, is there anything else, anything burning that you got to tell us before we get into things?
Yeah, I mean, actually, I just thought of something. Well, we at Untitled Planning, we started a new series, which is called, we're calling the Pop Culture Club. And basically, we're reviewing different movies and TV shows and like books like that are, you know, beloved, near and dear to all our hearts or some of our hearts, and maybe some more obscure ones, and connecting and drawing parallels between, like, you know, whatever's going on in those films and whatever's happening, like, from in our cities and in urban planning and in geography. And so we have our first episode launching at the end of this week. We're Sweet. Reviewing the movie, well, the musical actually, Burlesque, featuring none other than Christina Aguilera and Madame Cher. So if you like this blend of films and urbanism, then yeah, check it out.
I'm actually super stoked for that. That is like
exciting.
That is right up my alley. Every time I'm watching a movie and there's a train in it, I always just, I love trains.
exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah. That is such a cool project.
It's like that one scene from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood where Leonardo DiCaprio's character is like, hey.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly me. I'm excited. I'm excited for this. I'll put a link in the description when that first episode comes out. Cause that's, I feel like that's something our audience would probably be into. Who doesn't like pop culture mixed with their favorite, you know, urbanism, political thing, you know?
I love that.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
That's exciting. But my side activities, or I love a good movie and I love commenting on movies. Letterboxd is one of my favorite apps right now.
Nice.
I'd love to comment on them and everything. Like I joke that everything is urban planning. If you really like think about it, you can find a way to connect it. So even something as burlesque that you think is kind of unrelated, there's lessons to be learned. Basically we try to go through them. So
my wife has learned that very well, that lesson, as my comments are endless and she's like, oh my god, here we go again.
It's never ending. We see it everywhere. Like once you start thinking about it, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
So I'm super stoked for that series. I'm going to super promote that because I think that's like a perfect blend. And I hope that like starts to break the urbanism bubble a little bit and like get some other people interested in what we're talking about. And maybe they'll start seeing it in their own pop culture thing that they're getting involved in.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm stoked for that. Okay, Ethan, you've got a story for us.
So, everybody, some super exciting news, actually. The U.S. President, Joseph Robinette Biden, is going to be meeting with the Prime Minister of Japan. And they're going to be actually talking a little bit about high-speed rail, or at least Joe Biden wants to do that because he's kind of hinted at it. He's always been kind of known as a rail guy, but I think the coverage from a local paper, because this focus of this talk of high-speed rail is mainly focusing on Texas, since a lot of Japanese companies are interested in building high-speed rail for the Texas Triangle, that being Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio. So there's interest to do that, and since they want to talk about that, it's only fair that local news coverage covers this event that's going on here. Now, the local paper that covered this is the Kron, and they are a Houston-based newspaper, and they wrote a actually pretty decent article. However, I do have one little issue with it. The article is titled, Biden Expected to Talk Japanese High-Speed Rail with Japanese Prime Minister. And the real issue that I have with it here is that the quote underneath the first image for this article is in fact, it's hilarious, folks. I can't honestly believe it. I'm actually just looking for it here. But the actual quote underneath the picture is, the long-awaited light rail between Houston and Dallas is expected to make the agenda in President Biden's talks with the Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida.
Oh, it looks like...
It says light rail. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
I think they updated it because mine says the long-awaited high-speed rail system connecting Houston and Dallas.
It so does say underneath in the images, it should still say that. It said it at least 20 minutes ago, but... Okay.
But they had it as light rail.
They had it as light rail. It was just the caption underneath the image.
Oh, no, and, I see it. I see it now. Oh, yeah, they must have. So in one spot, it says high-speed rail. In another spot, it says light rail.
And for all of our viewers who don't know the difference, light rail is more localized transit. It's also called trams, streetcars. Some great examples we have are the C train, like in Calgary. And I don't know about you guys, but that is not made to go at high speeds, at high speed rail speeds. I don't think you'd be very comfortable taking the C train at 300 kilometers an hour, as convenient as that would be.
And that'd be incredible.
It would be. But this just kind of ties back into this thought that there is a lot of media coverage that goes around on just urbanist and especially trains, where it's, it almost seems like journalists just don't have any clue what they're talking about. And it would be really nice for them to actually start consulting, you know, at least some people who know a little bit about trains and, you know, transit planning or city planning in general, just to kind of get, you know, a little bit more informed and do a better job of informing the general viewer. Because they're, as small of a difference as this does seem, it is huge. Like, this is calling the C train high speed rail.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is, it's just not. It's just not.
Yeah.
And yeah, we really got to get media kind of, you know, more informed on what's going on in transit planning.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I think it's really important for transit experts and advocates to speak up and get involved locally in these things. I know there's a couple experts in Calgary who regularly write pieces for the local newspaper who kind of talk about these things. It's important to kind of set yourself up as a go-to person so that when journalists have questions, when they're writing stories like this, you're easy to find and you're easy to be contacted so that you can help make sure that there's a little bit more literacy in the media on these things.
Yeah, no, it's super important. And yeah, we definitely do need to make, you know, transit planners more well known to the media, just in terms of being able to communicate accurate information to the public. Because stuff like this, I mean, yeah, this can absolutely mess up perspectives. And I mean, this is the more harmless example, but there was actually a more harmful one where it actually... This is here. I'm going to get into a little bit of a rant here right now. You folks may not have noticed this, but there was an article a few days ago that said that the Las Vegas monorail was shutting down. And this was actually blatant misinformation, pretty much a full on. Yeah, it was just full on misinformation, completely untrue. It's not shutting down. The Las Vegas monorail had to come out and say we're not shutting down in the posts and everything like that. But the news had already spread out, and I still get people messaging me saying, did you hear the Las Vegas monorail is shutting down? And I'm just like, please, we need some media literacy here. Just a little bit. Just a drop. Not that much. Just a little bit. Please read beyond the headlines, because I read the original article that said it was shutting down, and it was basically just looking at implications of what could possibly happen and no actual certain information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not helpful. I like this story because I love the idea of Texas having like a Japanese style high speed rail. That'd be amazing.
Yeah,
like a real legit high speed rail.
It's been floated around quite a bit. I believe that at the moment they're still looking for someone who's willing to build it, but there is promise for the Texas Triangle to get high speed rail. And it is really exciting. I can't deny that. It's just, yeah, we got to get better information out to the journalists.
So I'm just curious to know who would be responsible for that. Like, is TOD getting the right of way and they have to work with like the private companies to build these rail lines, or how does that work? Do you know?
I would still imagine that they're kind of ironing it out, but if they're looking for right of way, my guess would be, I mean, yeah, it's really going to be up to the state, I mean, because there is a lot of private land in between that, and private land ownership, at least in the U.S., is pretty strong. So we're going to have to see, you know.
Unless there's highways and we need to expand the highways, then.
Oh, yeah, of course. TxDOT doesn't. Yeah, they don't care about your property. If you need one more lane on I-35, then, hey, we're getting one more lane. But you want to get a train? Communist.
Man.
Yeah, no, it's just it'll be a confusing mess when it comes to property rights and everything along that way. And it's definitely still a far out project, especially in terms of high speed rail. But if there's any region in the U.S. that could realistically use high speed rail other than the ones that have already been built or in the middle of the planning process, then yeah, it's the Texas Triangle.
Yeah. Alexandra, do you have any thoughts, comments, concerns about this?
Yeah, funnily enough, the only thing that comes to mind, I mean, there's a few things that come to mind, but the number one thing that came to mind when you were speaking to the, how funny it was that they wrote light rail is there's a running joke. I frequently go back to Greece. I go to Athens and there's a tram that runs through the city. There's also a subway system and there's buses, but talking about the tram, because it's like one of my favorite, well, actually when I was a kid, it was one of my favorite like modes of transit at the time. And then as I go back and I got older, I remember a friend of mine or a family member telling me that like the running joke about the tram is that like only tourists use it, because if you're trying to get anywhere on time, it's not the most feasible way of transit. And it's true. Like I took it back from like downtown, like where I live is technically like 15 minutes away from like almost anything except by tram. Then it's like an hour. But it's the most scenic route through the city, the most beautiful one, but it takes an eternity. So I'm just trying to picture a tram through the triangle that you're talking about.
What's hilarious about this is that Dallas actually does have a light rail system. Mm-hmm. So when I reposted this article, just kind of screaming into the void on Twitter, I had someone come in and say, comment, they said, The DART expansion plan is going on smoothly. So, you know, DART is Dallas Area Rapid Transit.
Very ambitious.
ambitious plans of running DART to Houston.
It's going to have one station at every single ranch and farm between the cities.
And they're going to build a massive parking lot for it.
I can't wait to see that project happen. But yeah, it is kind of interesting, like what you're talking about, Alexandra, about the different like levels and qualities of our different transit plans and where we want to put different things based on their use, right? Mm-hmm. And that's interesting. So Athens has like their light rail is very tourist oriented.
It's like it's not. It's just that it's really slow. It goes through the main parts. Like you can it connects across the city and it goes to all the main. Like it takes you downtown to Syntagma Square, like all the main like places you need to go. But just the speed is just really slow. But it's funny because it has its own track. It's just very slow.
So yeah. There aren't cars that are allowed to use the track. It has its own track the whole way.
Yeah. It's just very slow.
Huh. Interesting.
Which I'm like. It's not bad. I mean, it's also a different kind of like lifestyle. Like if Toronto is comparable to New York, where things are always very like fast, I think Athens or like Greece has like it's more like chill, which I appreciate, but yeah. Not when I'm trying to get somewhere on time with the tram.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. I think we're probably going to get more into that a little bit later. You've kind of brought up some things that I have questions for you about. Mm-hmm. And we have a little segment after our stories where we get to ask you a few questions and cool. Pick your brain about a few things. So I'm gonna jump into my story here. I have something interesting happened. This wasn't the original story that I was going to cover today. I originally was going to cover something suggested by one of our listeners, and but I'll have to get into that next week or something, because they had an interesting story to look at. But this is something that happened locally here in Calgary, and I wrote this out because I don't want to risk getting sued here, so I want to, you know, be specific about.
Don't be libelous now.
I don't want to be libelous. Yeah, so I want to be specific about my words. So in Calgary, there's a popular shopping/dining district on 17th Avenue Southwest. Many of the restaurants have patio dining out front, but there are always loud cars driving by, making the environment uncomfortable. I do have footage of this. I have footage of plenty of motorcycles and loud cars with aftermarket exhaust driving down here while I'm trying to enjoy a nice meal on a patio. It's hard on the experience. But I go on to say, last year, the BIA, the Business Improvement Area, did a survey. Now, I actually made a mistake here. I found out through the grapevine that the BIA did not survey the public. The BIA surveyed its members, and somebody else did a survey of the public, the results of which were not published, at least anywhere that I've been able to find, basically asking, should we pedestrianize? So we don't know where the results from the public survey done is, and we don't know who did that survey, but the BIA surveyed its members. Now, the businesses surveyed said no. They got 23 responses. Now, this is a BIA with 720 plus members. Okay, this is like lots of businesses. 23 of them responded, 16 said no, and 7 said yes. The executive director said to a reporter from Calgary Herald, she said, what was overwhelming is that they just said no. They got 16 people, 16 businesses said no to the idea of pedestrianization on 17th Avenue. And 16 out of 720, that's like 2%, 2% of the businesses. That is not overwhelming. But then this guy, Chris is his name, he made a petition on change.org to try and gather up some support for doing some pedestrianization on 17th Avenue. And he was met with a very interesting email. He sent the petition to the BIA, and he even tried contacting some of the board members, and he got met with an email that was basically, stop talking to us, take down your petition, and or we'll, like, we're threatening legal action against this. It was kind of an interesting response to a community member trying to, like, start a conversation and engage in a conversation that honestly has been ongoing. People have been talking about this for years, and it's gotten even people have gotten even more interested in the pedestrianization of this area in recent years and in recent months. Even it's become more of a conversation. So that's kind of some interesting Calgary happenings. And then the guy made a video about it. That's how we know about all of this. And tonight, this episode will air tomorrow morning, but tonight, a couple hours from now, I guess he'll be on CTV talking about it. So we'll see. This is a developing story. But yeah, Nick told me I had to share that one today.
You had to. It's wild to think, like, it seems, again, I don't want to be libelous here, and this is just what someone else might say. This is not coming from me, but someone might say that somebody sending this email to this small YouTuber and community member is a bit unhinged. Somebody might say that. I'm not saying that.
But somebody could.
Somebody might. Yeah. And to think that I said this to Alex before the podcast, to say that's overwhelming said no. Overwhelming majority said no. That's great. I said no. I'm a Steam user. I play games on Steam. It has to be 95% or more to be overwhelmingly positive. So no, it's just not.
Also, yeah, let's just look at it from a data perspective. This is just pure data. You have 27 businesses, or 26, if I'm
23
correct, Alex?
That responded. 20,
okay, 23 out of how many? Like 620?
720.
Out of 720. So, yeah, that's less than 2% response. That's we can't extrapolate data from that. I mean,
yeah.
Even if we did, yeah, no, that's just, that seems unrealistic. And yeah, bigger sample size is needed for accurate results on this one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something I'll add too. So Chris says in his video, he says that he has worked in BIAs. Like, this is a thing. And he knows, like, how hard the people who work in BIAs work and mm-hmm. how important it is for them to, like, help the businesses do well and help the area be pleasant and welcoming to the people who come there. And he lives in the area. He moved to this area specifically because of this shopping district, of the restaurants and the interesting culture that is down this strip of our city. And so he's pretty disappointed and upset about all of this, but it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Now, Alexandra is like an actual human professional with like an education.
Professional human?
Yeah. She's a professional human, been doing this for a while. And so like, I want to hear like what, like, I imagine you've worked with like communities and businesses and stuff. Like, what has been your experience in having these conversations to try and make an area more productive and more pleasant for people to be in?
Yeah, it's funny. In another life, or I guess the same life, but yeah, in another life, I was working for this organ. It's a major public arts organization in Toronto called Steps Public Art. Okay. And basically during the pandemic, it was like, I was a fresh grad from my undergrad, and I graduated right into the pandemic. So I was like, ah, the world's ending. And my first official job was, I was what they call it, the placemaking assistant. And then over time I became a Main Streets coordinator. So what I was doing is coordinating what we called our I Heart Main Street program. And so basically what we were doing is we were working with BIAs. I started off the first year, our pilot year, we worked with like 10 BIAs, I believe, across Toronto. And in the second year, it had exploded and we worked with like over 20 BIAs across Ontario. And so basically we're working with these BIAs to do placemaking projects. And so this could look a number of different ways. So it was like creating murals, but it was also like, remember during the pandemic and there was those like social distancing circles on the floor. Mm-hmm. So instead of having those like stands 6 feet apart, we would actually get artists to come and like actually make some sort of a digital mural and then like paste them across the neighborhood as a way of adding a pop of color, because, you know, people were so scared to go outside, and rightfully so. But ultimately, other than like obviously the frontline workers and the community members who were hurting, also the businesses that were relying on foot traffic that aren't big box stores like, you know, Walmart or whatever, they weren't getting the foot traffic they needed to stay alive. And so the BIAs I was working with were working really, really, really hard to make the main streets, making it amenable, making it comfortable for folks, so they would come back and support the businesses that they need to, who also have, you know, families to support and are also part of the community as well. So as much as their work was, their placemaking efforts was about supporting business, it was about actually a community building too. And then now I also work with Plaza Pops. I'm on their board, and they do really, really, really cool work. And they're an organization that works with BIAs, particularly in more of the outskirts of Toronto, so more in the suburban areas, which are like the inner suburban areas that don't have a lot of public space, but are quite car oriented, and that's just the way that the city has been designed. And so as a result, their main streets are less, or their BIAs are less along main streets, where, you know, along principal roads, so where you can access them via transit. They're more strip mall oriented. And recognizing that these communities, typically like diverse communities, need space that they don't have access to in order to congregate. They work with artists, they work with community organizations, they work with very closely with BIAs to take a portion of their parking lots and turn them into like parks, ultimately little oases where people can convene to eat food, to talk, to, they host programming, events, movie nights, and all these different things. So I would say that's so weird to hear that a BIA would respond in such a way, especially one that's so like 720 stores. I'm just trying to picture, unless they're all like stacked, I'm imagining the spread,
it's a street.
Like across this, I'm imagining it's huge. So that's to get only to make such a decision based on like 20 businesses. I'm curious. There's more, obviously more going on here, but I'm just curious. Like the plot thickens. I want to know more.
Yeah.
But
it's definitely like, it is very much a developing story. Like, this is going to be really interesting. Maybe I'll provide some additional context here so that people can kind of see where we're talking about with this BIA. So this is McLeod Trail. Lots of people have heard about McLeod Trail on this show and elsewhere. It is the worst strode in Calgary. this is the BMO Center. And right now, 17th Avenue is being extended into our kind of, these are stampede grounds, the new event center is going to be over here. This is where we currently play hockey at the Saddle Dome. But 17th Ave, the BIA kind of like it runs all the way along here. So it's all of these businesses here are involved in this. And in the summer, they do some really great, great work, with placemaking. You know, they tighten the street a little bit. They open up these patios. They allow for pedestrians to walk on this way. They've got some really cool boardwalk stuff going on. Mm-hmm. So it's a, like, it's a great place. People love being here. And there are so many great restaurants, like amazing restaurants down this strip. And, but the cars driving by really make it a hostile environment. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, you get a lot of aftermarket exhaust and stuff. And so having, having these patios here and then having the cars go by, it just makes it rough. And what people in Calgary are trying to do is have a conversation about creating this space that is obviously a space for people, obviously a place that people love to come and love to be, actually saying, you know what, this is just for people. Like, we're going to focus on that and create this into just the best space that it could be. So there are lots of ways to do that. There are lots of ways to make compromises without getting rid of cars completely, right? Lots of people bring up the need for accessibility. There are doctor's offices along here, right? So like there are other businesses. It's not just restaurants. It's not just parties and events, right? And so there, but the conversation is important, and it's disappointing the way that this BIA, or at least this BIA representative, because there's so many people in there, I don't want to lump them all in one category. Mm-hmm. It's disappointing the way that that this individual was responded to when he was trying to engage in this ongoing conversation about how we engage and interact with our city. And so hopefully this is just allowing it to kind of grow a little bit more and us to have this conversation a little bit clearer, as businesses, as individuals who frequent the area, as people who live in the area, as people who want the city to be a great place. So there's my additional context and a little bit of preaching added on at the end.
No, but I think you're right. Cause like, so I was just looking, obviously I haven't been there, so I don't know what it looks like, but like the one thing that came to mind was like benches. I have this like secret, I just like, I love benches. Whenever I go to different cities, I look at their benches, and that tells me a lot about like kind of how they're oriented towards people or not. Like, for example,
the litmus test.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. The litmus test. So I love a good bench. And it really started because, yeah, during that work, one of the projects, I forget which BIA, it was in a more rural area, but they came to us a really interesting, I guess, challenge where they're like, oh, we have a big elderly population and they can't get from one end of our BIA to the other. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so sad. What the heck? So they're like, okay, we're gonna make some benches, or we're gonna buy some benches. Can you paint them? And we're like, of course we can do that. We can find you an artist to paint your benches. And they did. And that's what, you know, that's what happened. And then and funnily enough, in the first year that we had done this project as well. So as I mentioned before, as part of our, like, these different BIA's COVID-19 recovery strategies. And there was still that, like, you know, social distancing thing going on. And so there's, and you brought up a good point where there's businesses that are like restaurants. So they would benefit from things like what we have in Toronto, it's called Cafe TO. So what allows people to actually have those like sidewalk or on street, like cafe patio things. So yeah, they have their own thing, which was good, but you have these in between strips of a main street that are mainly service oriented. And so they're the doctor's office is not necessarily getting the foot traffic that a local pub is getting at the same time. And so there's some like dead zones. And so one way to kind of bring one of those dead zones to life was they used their patio space to create a little pop-up park again. They took up, I think, two parking spots. We got an artist to paint a mural on one of them and an artist to paint on another mural. And then they brought in these planter boxes. We brought in a bench. And it was funny because initially one of the businesses was like, he wasn't into it. He was really not a big fan of it. But I remember what the BIA, the executive director, was telling me. It's funny. It was funny for him because he actually, you know, was walking down the main street and he was observing how people were interacting with the space. And funnily enough, he was watching as there was a group of people walking by, and they ended up looking. Like they turned right and they saw the mural, and it happened to be this giant fish, which is pretty eye catching. So anyway, yeah. So they saw the fish and they're like, oh, okay, interesting. And then they turn around, and then where did they go? They walked directly into that business, that the one that was, like, you know, hating on the mural ultimately. So it seems it's a lot of the work, whether it's planning or cultural planning or public art, is actually convincing people to do that. Like, these small things make a difference, and they really do. They're kind of hard to quantify, which I think is why some people get scared. Like, the amount of people I have to convince about paint, like, people are really scared of paint, and I have to tell them, I'm like, it'll wash off. Like, it will go away. You don't have to worry about it being there permanently. Mm-hmm. But like, the fear of paint, the fear of like pink and like different colors, it and I understand why, because, you know, it's a risk and it's not the norm, but like, we need these little, just like little risks in order to make things a little better, or sometimes a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. It can make a big difference. Yeah. I appreciate your insights into that. Kind of giving like some good examples of how these things can be scary. I mean, change is scary, right? But then also like being able to see like, okay, it's making a difference, right? And having that conversation. And yeah, as we wrap up this specific conversation about BIAs, I just want to say, like, they've got a tough job to do. They have a lot of people to please, and and I'm sure they work hard to do that. So this isn't any hate to BIAs, and it's certainly not libel, or I guess we're speaking, so it's not slander. Nick, you look like you have a thought.
No, I'm just excited for Alexandra to talk about this next story. I was just reading the article.
Yeah, take it away, Alexandra. This kind of fits in.
Yeah. Okay. So this article, I saw it. Sorry, I'm pulling up the title again. So yeah, basically it's titled, Toronto has a new food hall where all restaurants are run by newcomers and refugees. And I got excited for two reasons. A, because I love a good food hall. Three reasons. B, I love a good food hall, number one. I went to this really interesting one in Chicago, which I guess is a story. I'll share it later. But anyway, I went to this really cool one in Chicago, and that really made me appreciate like these alternative ways of like, I guess, grouping food in one space, because and the opportunities it creates for like not only to experience other cultures, but then also just to like, I don't know, see the city in new light and congregate in different ways. It was called the Timeout Market in Chicago. It was really cool. I'm gonna tell the story now, but basically, long story short, is I went with a group of friends, all of us urban planners. They were like actually my classmates from my cohort, and we're like, okay, we're going to Chicago. And I don't know what happened. We decided to eat all the tourist food. So like, it was like a lot of bread. It was a lot of meat and not a lot of vegetables. At one point in our trip, we were there for like, I think 4 days. Some of it, we had it all broken off into like different, like, you know, to do our own different activities. And so me and a few friends decided, we're like, okay, we're going to the Timeout Market. We're going to go find something to eat with greens. And I remember going there, and there was this like huge food hall, and there's like these picnic tables and lights, and it was just like bumping, and it was all these different things. I was like, I just need some rice. And so I went to one restaurant, and it was like an Indian restaurant, and I got rice and mushrooms. And I went to a Mexican restaurant right next door, and I got plantains. And I was like, this is it. And that was heaven. And that saved my trip and my stomach throughout the rest of Chicago. So I have a deep appreciation for food halls now. But anyway, the second story was that I used to be part of the Toronto Youth Food Policy Council. And so I was deep in the like food justice, food systems kind of like, I guess, like worlds for like a hot minute. And so anything that has to do with food gets me really excited. And then the last thing is this idea of entrepreneurship, because it's not just a food hall. It's an entrepreneurship incubator. So like personally, a lot of the research I do is and the research that we do at Untitled Planning is around community economic development, and it's particularly related to entrepreneurship. Like my own, like, I guess we have like our thesis that we do for our degree, and mine was about looking at like social procurement and businesses, and particularly around how to support small to medium enterprises, particularly like how to support minority businesses, minority owned businesses. So yeah, I thought this was really cool to give a space where newcomers and refugees that are, you know, coming from their own countries with like highly skilled, often highly skilled, you know, with all these different, I guess, like resources and know-how. And then they come here and because of all these silly kind of like, I guess, demands that we put on them, they don't get a chance to, I guess, exercise in their field or maybe to explore other pathways in the same way that, you know, some of us who are like born here get to do as well. So I think this is an interesting blend of a bringing more diversity in terms of like food. Although I will add, like Toronto is really big on like you can get almost any kind of food here. So this is just another way to add more to the landscape of diverse food across our city. But I think the particular spin on this focusing on entrepreneurship, incubating entrepreneurship. So hopefully these businesses aren't necessarily stuck in this incubator in this particular hall. They can go on and expand to, you know, other parts of the city or other parts of the country if they desire. But I think giving a foundation for them to grow from is really, really cool. And I hope that, you know, they all see the success that they're looking for. So, yeah.
That's awesome. This is super cool. Nick, you were excited about this. Do you have any questions or thoughts?
Well, my thoughts is like these places aren't just, you know, I think the merits of this of being an incubator for newcomers to the country is incredible. And I absolutely love that. But these places are absolutely community hubs. And my mind always comes back to just the mall, because I grew up in a pretty suburban place like London, mm-hmm. Ontario. I was a teenager in London, Ontario. And that was the place to go to with your friends when I was a teenager to go hang out. But it wasn't just us. It was a lot of elderly people too. They'd go there for people watching to meet up with their friends. Mm-hmm. And we need more of these places, and to see it like this, and it's not just filled with your, you know, your typical suspects, your Orange Julius and, you know, Tim Hortons and Taco Bell or whatever, is amazing. I absolutely love this.
Yeah. Sbarro. It is really exciting to see the kind of like food hall revival. It kind of feels like we're taking baby steps closer and closer towards kind of bringing back the whole city market idea, you know, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. places like Pike Place in Seattle or Reading Terminal in Philadelphia or the Grand Central Market in LA. A lot of these like older, you know, city markets where you not only had, you know, food options for like immediate dining, but you also had, you know, produce stands, butchers, you know, everything like that, you know, delis, mm-hmm. and just places where these smaller businesses could have a place to thrive, because mm-hmm. these stalls, generally compared to what we have out in the suburbs, where you need to get a whole building just to have even the most basic of businesses, mm-hmm. generally isn't as economically sustainable for these smaller businesses. And having these sort of city markets or food halls is a really, really good way of allowing these kinds of opportunities for people, you know, who don't have the amount of capital to, you know, go and rent out what was formerly a Taco Bell or Pizza Hut in the suburbs and actually, you know, have the room to make a business with, you know, less square footage and just give someone an option to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and hopefully being more accessible, you know, by foot or bicycle, right? Like all the places, like I went to a few different places in Montreal when I was there a couple months ago. And the best places were the ones where it was like you get off the train and you just like walk up the escalator and you're there, right? Like those are always the best places, like creating more accessible places instead of just it being like the mall's food court, right? Like you got to go. If there is transit there, then you probably have to walk across a big parking lot from that transit in order to get into the people space. And so stuff like this. I also want to highlight like the variety of foods that are here. So I kind of clicked through some of these places. So we've got Indian, Thai, Caribbean, East Asian, Mexican, and there's also a place that is for vegetarian and vegan subs. You know, like being able to have this variety of food in places. That's another nice thing about these things. You can meet up with people here and everybody's happy. You know, like everybody just like find what you want. Mm-hmm. This is our table. Come back and we'll hang out. And it's a great place to try something new. You know, you might grab something one day, but then see something on your way out that you might want to try.
You know, I got this super random anecdote I wanted to share. So I had some Indian food with my friends the other night. And I was talking to another friend of mine who lives in Ontario. And I was just telling him about this restaurant. I was like, next time you come to Vancouver, you got to try it. It's best Indian food I've had in Vancouver. And he goes, oh, I've never had curry before. I'm like, hey, really? Like what, like Thai curry? He's like, nope. I was like, how is that possible? Like, I don't know. Anyway,
yeah.
Next time I'm going to force feed him some curry. And I'm going to, next time I'm in Toronto, I'm checking out this food court. Cause yeah, I'm getting hungry right now thinking about all this.
You know what I always say?
Yeah, it's a great article between lunch and dinner for me, guys. Thank you. Thanks, Alexandra. You made us all hungry.
Have you been to this place, Alex?
No, I've been meaning to. It's funny. I'm just messaging my friend and she's like, when are you free to go? And I'm like, I'm not, but I will go. I'm not for the next few weeks, but it's on my list. I'm really excited to check it out. But it's funny. You brought up the idea you're talking about the malls. And that's also another, like, I guess, small, like, love of mine as well. Like that idea about, yeah, being a teenager and then not having somewhere to go. In another life, that would have been like my research, like focus as well, is like trying to see, like making space actually for teenagers in the cities, because they're often left out, or like youth are left out of how we design our spaces and where they can congregate. So I used to work at the public library. And so a lot of I was like shelving the books. And so you end up, I eavesdrop on a lot of conversations. There's nothing else to do, honestly. So, but it was just funny to go around and then observe the kind of, and then also took a public space course. So we actually, and then actually had to go and analyze how, you know, people were using the library. And that, at least that was my designated site, or the site that I had selected. And yeah, observing the multitude of people, observing, first of all, who uses libraries, which is everybody, but I was trying to see who like use it the most. And I remember every morning there was this collective of like elderly people that would come and congregate around the newspapers. And then they would sit there and read their newspapers and chat. And there was like their own friendship circle. There's another group of like nannies that would come in. For context, it's like a children's library. And the neighborhood where I live is very like, there's kids everywhere. There's schools everywhere. So it makes sense. So the nannies would come together and congregate, and they would let the kids just run wild, and they would just have their own like play date area on the side and then amongst the books. And then after school, I would observe my fellow teens would come in and like, you know, either do their homework, get tutoring, or just like sit there and like gossip. And my sister, who's a teenager now, like that's like, they love the libraries where they go to hang out. And actually our local library just closed down for repairs. So they're like, where are we going to go? And I'm like, good luck. I don't know. there's not really much out there for you. So the mall ends up being like, if it's not your friend's house, if your friend has space these days, given like, you know, where we're at with housing and different things, you know, you end up at the mall, but then the mall is also not always that amenable. But I think it's interesting how I've seen malls like transform, not all of them, but in different ways. I recently went to the Vaughan Mills, which is a little bit out of the way, so a different city. And I saw they had it's like a co-working space in one of the sort of a store. But yeah, it was a co-working space in Eden Center downtown. There's a mall. They now have they run it with basically an entrepreneurship design art gallery space/incubator space that's run with like a professor at OCAD, and like it's called Design With. It's really cool. And then they're also working with like these different women from the Regent Park neighborhood, and they do all kinds of like workshops on how to like make shoes and all these different things. It's very cool. And then the mall, there's a mall that I go to, which is actually near this food hall, where there's like a gym, but there's also a public library, and it's like one of the largest libraries. It's beautiful. Yeah, so there's a library in there. But then my favorite part of that mall is that in the basement, like right before you like, go to the gym, there's a group of old ladies that always come and do Tai Chi, and they're so cute. And yeah, I'm like, I don't know why they particularly picked this random corner in the basement of the mall, but it works for them, and I'm happy to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, like you talking about libraries, like these are a really special place in our neighborhoods that aren't just for pulling out books. Like the place that I work at is right by a library. And so whenever I get to work early, I'll usually just sit in the library for a little bit, write in my journal and people watch. And then when it's time to go, I pack my things up and I peace out. We do got to keep moving though, because
we got a boogie on.
Yeah, we got a boogie on. We have a lot of things we want to get to today. So yeah. I'm going to throw this over to Nick for his story.
Yeah, this one's the definitely downer story. So this happened yesterday. This news came out. So driver alleged, starting here. Syed Mosfeghi Zadeh pleaded not guilty to dangerous operation of a vehicle causing death and dangerous operation of a vehicle causing bodily harm in July 6th, 2021 crash. Zadeh failed to see four red lights, which had been red for over 20 seconds, and pedestrians crossing the street. His SUV hit another vehicle before jumping the curb and fatally striking a 23-month-old baby and her father, Michael Hiva. And the judge ruled that while Zadeh's single momentary lapse of attention had a tragic outcome, it was not a criminal act. And let me just add right now that this driver is alleged gang member, driving with a forged license, and had two phones in the car for which apparently was no evidence of him using at the time of the accident. Hmm. And I'm thinking, is there no other responsibility to driving your car than watching out for a red light and stopping? It seems like that is negligent homicide, like at the least. It's mind-blowing. So I remember when this happened, this was like 3 years ago, that he killed this baby and hurt the father very badly. And it's just incredibly sad that this happens over and over and over, and we're not actually doing anything about it. You know, and it really bugs me because, like I said earlier, I said I was going to come back to this story coming from city council right now in Vancouver, and trying to get at least the local streets to be 30 kilometers per hour. It would not count on towards this street. That would not be applicable on this street, because this happened downtown on a main arterial for which the speeds are 50 kilometers per hour. However, if it was 30 kilometers per hour, how would these situations come out differently? Yeah. You know, if this driver still wasn't speeding, say he was going 50 kilometers per hour, what if he was going 30 kilometers per hour? What if that was the speed limit? What if we designed our streets for that to be the case? How many of these stories would just simply not happen anymore? You know, and that's the thing that I think needs to change and has been changing in some places. I don't know if you guys have heard the news coming out of Hoboken in Jersey City. They made all of their streets 20 miles per hour a few years ago.
Wow.
They have reached Vision Zero. They did it. They have had no fatalities on the streets.
Yeah.
It's possible. Yeah. We can do this. And it's just so annoying to me that we just have the same things happen over and over and over. And we just go, oh, that's too bad. It's a tragic accident. No, like this is, we know it's going to happen again.
Yeah.
It's going to happen on our streets again until we change things.
Absolutely. I see. One thing I always say is that you can pretty much get away with any crime if you commit it with a car. It, like, seriously, like, if you want a lighter sentence, just do something with a car instead of, you know, any other weapon. A car is a very much a tool like anything else. And if you misuse it, like in this case, you just get away with it. Like, I feel like we just don't punish crimes that involve cars. DUIs are practically jokes. Most people, yeah, like seriously, like you'll hear people and they'll talk about, you know, having a DUI like it was like going 10 miles above the speed limit. Like, I don't think that's the equivalent, but yeah, we really need to treat, you know, these kinds of actual crimes and negligence and maliciousness in some cases like actual crimes rather than, you know, a needless accident. And, you know, even the term accident is incredibly problematic.
Yeah. And I think I need to drive a point home here too. And if we can be as generous to this driver as possible and say, yes, we've all had lapses in judgment while driving. I've driven and you zone out for a while, never had an accident, but it happens, right? Let's say that's what happened. Okay. Then it's going to happen again. If it was just an, you know, honest mistake that caused this crash, we need to change the environment so it doesn't happen. And we're not doing that. And that's my point. If you're not blaming the driver, you have to blame the engineers.
Yeah.
And you don't have to point the finger. This has to be like a coroner's inquest after somebody dies. It's not trying to point a finger and say, you're at fault. You need to pay for this. It's to say, how did this person die? How can we make sure this doesn't happen again? We need to make our streets safer, make them more complex so that when people are in cars, they are forced by their subconscious to pay attention so our streets are safer.
Yeah. Yeah. And Nick, you had a great video on that that came out today about Japan streets, about building narrower, making it complicated, make it like these complex environments so that your brain is forced to pay attention instead of, I don't know what road this happened on, but it's in Canada. So I assume the lanes were probably too wide and you've got slip lanes and you've got far side traffic signals. You've got lack of bollards. You've got poor sidewalk infrastructure. Right? You're prioritizing cars at every turn. The cars are going to be prioritized, right? Like, it's not a shock to anybody. It's not surprising to anybody. This is just like, It's just expected now. Whereas when a cyclist, you know, Nick, you shared that little skit that you did with us last week. When a cyclist goes too fast around somebody, it becomes news, right? Like, that's an important news story, right? Like, these young people on their scooters, Alexandra, you're talking about, like, where people go to spend time, and that teenagers are often just, like, forgotten, and that's why kids rush to get their driver's license when they turn 16, so that suddenly now they can go somewhere. But guess what? You just gave a teenager a driver's license, and you made it simple. You made it easy to do because it's important and it's critical that they have it in order to participate in anything. But then you make it so easy for somebody to commit crimes, like Ethan's talking about, with a vehicle. If you want to murder somebody, do it with a car, because you're going to get off.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really sad. And I don't know if anybody else has to say anything about this, but yeah, I'm just sending my condolences to the family, because bringing back this child that they lost. It's a tragic accident. And I don't know how this would affect them in their healing to know that the person who was responsible for the death of their child is getting off on criminal charges. It's really, I don't know what to say. I'm speechless, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Does anybody have any other thoughts on that before we move on? No? All right.
All right. Let's bring it back.
Let's bring it back. We've got a little fire and fury and sadness there. But we want to ask Alexandra a few questions here. Nick, why don't you ask your question you've got?
Yeah. I'm not going to ask this one I've written. I've got another one in my brain right now, because I've been listening to your podcast and it's fantastic. Urban Limitroph.
Thank you.
If you're listening to this podcast right now, anybody out there, just turn it off right now. Go listen
to Alexandra's
podcast. It's fantastic. Well edited. Great, great guests.
Thank you.
And when did I listen? I don't remember when I listened to it. I think it's one of your earlier podcasts. And you were talking about, as we were talking about just earlier, about young people in third places and having places to go. And you were talking about having, like, for example, skate parks. We don't build our cities for the youth to have places to go. We don't build for them. We're building for adults and things like that. So I'm wondering, what things can we do to better accommodate the youth so they have things to do and places to go?
That's a good point. That's a good question. I think one of my favorite episodes from Urban Limitroph, where we talked a little bit about that, was the case of the Mafra Foundation in Ghana. Hmm. And basically, funnily enough, talking about markets, they were talking about, in the markets in Ghana, they're quite noisy, they're quite loud, they're quite boisterous. But then often the owners or the business people that are working in these markets are women who are often mothers who have small children, you know, that they need to take care of ultimately. And but so you end up having my guest was explaining is that the children end up, you know, actually not having a lot of stimulation. They don't have anything to do per se. And so what they did is that they worked with the Mafra Foundation, and they worked with the different, you know, entrepreneurs, and they created a little park within the market for the children to have a place to play, to learn, and, you know, enjoy themselves. So ultimately, I would say it's the same thing whether you're creating a space within a market, and whether you're creating a space within a city, you need to you need to talk with teens, you need to talk with youth, understand what is it that they need. Because there's also nuances. There's another group, they're called Make Space for Girls in the UK. And they're actually looking at, it's not just creating space for teenagers, it's also creating space particularly for the differences amongst teenagers, but particularly teenage girls who have a different set of needs, because at that age, you're dealing with all these different kind of either societal pressures, you know, family pressures, cultural pressures about who you can or cannot interact with, when you can or cannot go outside. So there's also other sorts of, measures you need to put in place when you're designing a space to make it more comfortable for them. Like, for example, I remember reading this article and they were talking about basketball courts. I haven't experienced these basketball courts in myself, because most of the ones I see are at school, so they're quite open and they're just, there's no cage, what's it called, fences around them. But in some cities, apparently they are fenced. And so they're talking about how one of the issues with one some of these courts when they're designed that way is that if there's only one entrance, a lot of girls actually don't feel comfortable going into the space because they might be, you might be blocked. There's only one entrance. There's only one way for you to get in or out. So they don't necessarily want to go in, period. And if there is a group of guys already out there, you know, doing their thing, they might feel a little less comfortable, you know, even trying to like get involved or trying to take up space for themselves. So it's a no. So they suggested, you know, having two entryways. So it's like little simple things like that that can go a long way in making people feel comfortable in a space, but also like designing a space where they can enjoy themselves. So I guess that wasn't really a straight answer because I think there's a lot that needs to be done, but it's also like, I think very context specific because like one thing I've been thinking about, like I was telling you all before, I was doing like placemaking interventions. But you know, for context, these projects were all in the summer, but we're in Canada. And so what do you do during the winter? Like winter placemaking is actually a really interesting topic that I haven't like fully wrapped my head around because I am like a warm weather person. So like in the winter, you don't really see me outside if I can avoid it. So I'm just always trying to think about like what could possibly get me to go outside. Like I love ice skating. I like figure skating. So I will go out of my way to go and find some ice. But like it's still not everyone's like that. So yeah. And then not everyone can skate and it's not accessible for everybody. So what can be done? Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. Thanks for sharing. I have a question for you. And that is, so your podcast, Urban Limitroph, again, it's a great show. And you talk specifically about urbanism across Africa and the African diaspora. Mm-hmm. And so like, I'm wondering, cause in the urbanist space, like we mostly talk about like Western Europe and some like Eastern Asia. Right. Like there's a lot that just like gets like skipped over. Right. And most of these channels are based in, you know, the US and Canada. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, a lot in Canada, like more than, you know, you would expect in Canada.
Which makes sense.
We got to study the ratio of Canadian urbanists in the space. And just
that would be interesting. We do have like a significant amount. But I'm curious, like, What is one specific thing that you have seen is like kind of a characteristic of African urbanism that you think would be great to just like broadcast and maybe see adopted outside of that sphere?
That's a good question. I'd say honestly, and this is the thing that actually sparked me wanting to create that podcast was there's this like strong spirit of just like, I guess, informality, if that makes sense. And that's just like just trying things. There's a running joke in Toronto about like Toronto being like, we never want to be the first to try anything. We want to be like the 131st. And then we're like, okay, we'll try it. And then we'll try it. And then we won't actually like put in all the policies in place to actually make it as good as what we were trying to copy. And then it doesn't work. And we're like, forget about it. And right, we'll never do it again. It's sort of like the analogy I would use. And it's not just Toronto. It's other, like, you know, we talked about the BIA earlier today and being afraid essentially. And I talked about my experience with people with paint, you know, just being scared to paint things. But like when I went to Congo, I went to Lubumbashi to see my family. I just saw people were just trying and everything. And some things didn't work, but a lot of things did. Like the most interesting thing to me when I got there was that it's a recurring issue, particularly in Congo, but also like I think across the continent is energy ultimately. But what's interesting, the way that the city or I shouldn't say the city, I would say citizens have gotten around it is by basically they rely on solar energy. I mean, there are actually a number of different ways. There's people, they have like generators. There's people who don't have electricity. There's people that, you know, are actually like using different electrical, like pulling electricity from like other like wires, other their neighbors and, you know, coming together in collectivity to like figure out their own energy issues. But the last thing is actually solar energy. And I thought that was interesting because there was like solar powered fridges, solar powered TVs, solar powered, like honestly, like everything you could think of solar powered. And I thought that was really interesting because, you know, on the flip side in Canada, or at least at the time, a lot of reticence, I mean, we're making strides, obviously, towards using more renewable energies, but there is a lot of reticence to use, let's say, these energies in a way that's more, I guess, accessible in that way. So I thought that was interesting, that that spirit of like informality of just wanting to try something. But I'll also say that spirit of collectivity. There's a really, I think, strong understanding that like if you do things alone, you're not going to make it. You need to group people together. And these are people from different walks of life, from different skills, different backgrounds, all within these different places to try and make it work when, you know, in the face of adversity, whatever that looks like, whether it's like political adversity, but it could also just be like financial situations as well, or energy, like I gave an example of. But it's really using what you have, using the people you have and the skills you have to try and make the best of what you can, and honestly, like thriving most often than not. So
I appreciate that's a great insight, and that is like something that we struggle with so much in Canada and the US, is just like these constant studies instead of just being like, you know what, interesting idea, why don't we try it? And just kind of going out and engaging on that local and community level, just to like make the places we care about a little bit better. And yeah, like you said, some things will work and some things won't. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that insight. Ethan, do you have a question?
In the interest of time, I am going to save any questions right now. It's just we're pushing it.
we are pushing it. We're obviously going to have you back on the show. I think Absolutely. We want to do like a show with both you and Sammy where we can just like dive into you guys and like what you're working on and stuff.
Sure thing.
Where it's not just like focused on the news. We did start doing news shows, so that's like a format we can do now.
Yeah.
I want to skip. We had a whole section planned talking about like e-bikes and stuff, because it was a question we asked in our last episode. But I feel like if we do that now, we're going to just like blow through it and not actually get time to discuss it. So I want to end off on Jen's question, because it'll be interesting to hear Alex's answer as well. So Jen Hall, friend of the show, former co-host as well. She says, local urbanism community groups have been one of my favorite discoveries from getting into urbanism. Please share some of your favorite urbanism groups. For example, Strong Towns, Critical Mass, etc. Ethan, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, so all these groups are great that Jen listed. Strong Towns, always good. Love Mike Pasternak. He's the guy behind their whole media team, you know, online. But one group that I think goes unrecognized a lot of the time, Parking Reform Network, is probably one of my favorites out there. Mm-hmm. And it's just, they do such a great job of showing how much space in our cities is wasted specifically on parking. And then they also do a really good job of showing, you know, like what cities are up to on, you know, getting rid of parking minimums. And it's just something that's just such a small change that makes such a big difference for cities. So yeah, go check out Parking Reform Network. You can see they have this really cool, you know, thing on their page where you can see how much of a certain city's downtown is covered by parking, and if they're doing anything to fix it or not.
Hmm. I like that. Alex, do you have a favorite group?
I mean, that's a tough one. I mean, my whole podcast is highlighting my favorite group, so I'm trying to pick one. It's a little bit tricky. Okay, well, all those aside, if I have to give another light to some other ones, like just like urbanist, like specific, because that's also a tough one. Okay. I have like three that come to mind. So I'm just going to name the names and you look them up after. Okay. I think there's the Parkdale's People Economy in Toronto. They do such great work, like just like between like running a community land trust, doing all these different economic initiatives. They have an event actually coming up on the 27th where they're celebrating. I can't remember. They did some sort of like community plan, but like I'm saying, if you're in Toronto on the 27th of April, I believe, check it out, head on to their site and see all the interesting work that they're doing. They do so many things. I don't even have enough time to actually go through all of it. Another group I would say is More Neighbors Toronto. We were talking about this a little bit earlier, but like they do, basically they're trying to be the YIMBYs that are fighting against the NIMBYs, going out there and saying, yes, we need civic action. We need civic participation. It seems scary. It seems tough, but it's so important. And if you do it together, it makes it actually really fun. On a side note, I went to a deputation 2 days ago and it took a minute, but it was the drama It was, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Draft Day. And basically the whole film is like trying to figure out who the top NFL pick will be for the year. Mm. But it was like that, but in real life and about city issues. So I recommend getting involved. And then my last one, as I mentioned before, was Plaza Pops. They do such amazing work with community engagement, at economic development and placemaking. So check them all out.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. Awesome. And Nick?
There's several in Vancouver that I'm interested in. I help with Vision Zero Vancouver. I absolutely love that group. It is a very dedicated group of volunteers. We talked about the brick thing last week that I helped make with them. Mm-hmm. But I'm also involved in the Strong Towns conversation here in Vancouver. That's very, very new in Vancouver. So it's growing. If you're interested in that in Vancouver, please come out to the meetings. I've learned a lot already from them. But I think my favorite, no shade on anybody else, but Hub Cycling in Vancouver is because they are teaching the youth to get on two wheels. And more than that, they're teaching people who might be afraid of that, people who are minorities or a lot of adult women who have never ridden a bike, helping them get on two wheels. And I absolutely love that they're teaching the city to ride, the future generation mostly, which is just absolutely what we need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For me, I've got to go with More Neighbors Calgary, largely modeled after More Neighbors Toronto. We've got an active Discord server. The people in there, like I learn so much from them. And there are people in there who are just like the nerdiest people about developments happening around the city. And we have the almost like watch parties of these meetings, which really makes it a lot more entertaining and a little less dry to watch those things. So, yeah, I invite anybody to actually comment down in the comments. What are some of your favorite areas? Answer or favorite organizations? Answer Jen's question here, because I think it's really important that we find those groups in our area. They are in your area. They do exist. And so hopefully some conversation can happen down in the comments to get people out. Nick, do you want to start wrapping us out?
Yeah, I've got a recommendation. So I talked about it just briefly last week. This is a book that I just finished reading today, actually, and it's called City Limits. And this is by Megan Kimball, Infrastructure, Inequality, and the Future of American Highways. And this is probably one of my top five urbanist books that I've ever read, most likely, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it's not because I think it has the most wisdom or anything, but I found it the most enjoyable. And it was very readable. And that's what I look for in a book, because if it's going to get me to finish the book, I think that's a top quality to have in a book. But it's about Texas DOT and about their highway expansion, and not just about the stuff that many of us know about highway expansion in the United States, mostly about destroying cities and most overwhelmingly in Black communities. They talk about that a lot. But what I really love about this, it's not a high bird's eye view. Megan really gets down and talks to people. It focuses mostly on this one woman, Modesty Cooper. She's a Black woman who works for the armed forces, and it's about her story. She built this house and the fight that she had to try, she's still going through, to try to keep her house from getting demolished, something she built from the ground up. It's heartbreaking, but I absolutely love books when they really dig into the people's experience, because it really brings home how much this stuff affects people. But what I really loved about the book is how it brings it home in the end, and that change is possible. These things aren't a foregone conclusion. You can fight against this kind of stuff and make it stop. And one point that she brings up is a story from Long Island back in the 60s, I think, where a grandmother, Robert Moses himself, knocked on her door to say that a highway is going through your backyard or buying your house. And she met him with a shotgun, which is crazy. But she won in the end, and New York City won, or Long Island won in the end, and that highway did not get built. So it's possible to stop these things from happening. Mm-hmm. So if you know you're out there somewhere and you see a highway expansion that you don't want happening in your city, get involved and check out if there's organizations, because obviously this is mostly talking about Austin, Dallas, and Houston, and the organizations that are trying to stop the highway expansions there and removing highways. Get involved, because it's possible to actually change these things from happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's awesome. City Limits. Absolutely. By Megan Kimball.
Awesome. Thanks, Nick. Okay, let's wrap this thing up. Alexandra, where can people go to find you?
All right. You can find me on Urban Limitrophe on or Urban Limitrophe podcast, depending on the platform, Instagram, Twitter, all that fun stuff. If you want to learn more about Untitled Planning, then yeah, you can find us on Untitled Planning on all platforms. Similarly, I have a website for both channels. So just type it in and you'll find me there.
Excellent. Ethan.
Folks, you can find me at Climate and Transit on pretty much everything except for Twitter. You can find me there at Climate Transit. I actually do have another video coming out this Friday. I can't wait to release it for you all.
Excellent. Nick?
I'm at Nick Laporte or Nick the Door and other socials.
Fantastic. And for myself. Yes.
Sorry, Alex.
No. Hey, it's a great video. Go seriously, do watch his new video. My name is Alex Williams. You can find me at Humane Cities on Instagram and YouTube, and now also at Unsprawling Instagram and YouTube, specifically if you want to hear about all the urbanisty things happening in Calgary. We're about to pop off. So with that, I'll thank everybody for joining us. And we'll see you next week.
Folks, remember, trains are good, cars are bad.
Two wheels good.
And we always go feet first. All right, take care.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. For more episodes, find us on your favorite podcatcher or on YouTube at Radio Free Urbanism.